Chapter 16. The Winding Ways of Umber Hulk Corridors.
"We should be gone from here," Zack told Benny Ago when the troop had regrouped back at the assigned meeting spot.
"Gone? We know the gnomes are about in mining, and now can be fairly certain that House Hunsrin has plans regarding..."
Zacnafane was shaking his head through every word, prompting Benny Ago to pause and stare at him.
"What?"
"They are mining, and yes, House Hunsrin is trying to work with them, or with a traitor among their ranks at least," Zacnafane explained. "I saw the exchange, a priestess who I think not of House Hunsrin."
"One of the visitors to the Hunsrin troop, then," said Binafane, and Zacnafane glanced at his old housemate and nodded.
"He gave her some ore as proof of the find," Zack explained. "Arandir, I expect."
"And you wish us gone from this place?" Benny Ago asked incredulously.
"This is exactly why we are out here.
And now we know."
"And now we must stop it," Benny Ago said. "We either stop it by chasing away the Hunsrins or remove this traitor from the equation. In either case, we ruin their plans. This arrangement cannot stand."
"You do not understand," Zack said. "There is more afoot here than we know. Something strange."
Benny Ago looked at him curiously. Binafane moved closer, as did Nav Rayandir, both leaning in after the atypical uncertainty in Zack's voice.
"There was something strange in the way the gnome echoed every command from the priestess," Zack clarified. "That alone hinted to me that someone or something was in my mind as well, trying to compel me to go down and join in the exchange."
"To slay the priestess and take the ore as your own?" Nav Rayandir asked.
"No, hardly that."
"You always did so enjoy killing priestesses," Binafane remarked.
"No, I mean, yes," said Zack, shaking his head emphatically. "But I didn't want to kill her. I wanted to go down there to join with her and aid her in her endeavors."
All three looked at him with open skepticism. Zack nodded, accepting and agreeing with their incredulity.
"Someone or something was in my mind, trying to compel me, to dominate me."
"Priestesses are demons," Nav Rayandir remarked. But Benny Ago held up his hand to silence Deer and forego any returning quip from Binafane. "Matron Mother Beanri herself would have a hard time magically enlisting you to her whims," he told Zacnafane. The weapon master shrugged.
"Which is why I have a bad feeling about our endeavor. There is more to this than I saw, more to this than House Hunsrin trying to gain a trading partner among the deep gnomes, more to this than House Hunsrin itself, of that I am certain."
Benny Ago looked to his two other principal scouts. They were a small band here and badly outnumbered by the Hunsrin group, which sported no fewer than four priestesses.
"We know what we came to know," Nav Rayandir said. "The Hunsrins are trying to work with this splinter Zerif Neblin mining troop, and they have some outside help."
"We should let Jarlaxle determine our next steps," Binafane agreed. "Perhaps his Oblodrin friend can determine some of the unanswered questions about these new observations."
"Objections?"
Benny Ago asked, looking to the two scouts, then to Zack.
"I think it best we be gone from this place," Zack said.
It hurt him to say it. He didn't want to be back in Menzo Baranzon at this time, surely, given the nasty ramifications to his son. But he knew what he felt, and it was obvious to him that their position out here was tentative at best. If someone or something had tried to dominate him, to say nothing of almost succeeding, then that being knew he was out here, and so the Hunsrins likely knew that all of them were out here. Just as Benny Ago nodded his agreement, a call from around the corner startled the four. Moments later came the sound of fighting and the goblinoid guttural grunts of bugbears. Zacnafane had his swords in hand before the others had even begun to register the noise, and as he always did, Zack ran toward the trouble. He came around the corner to see a trio of Bregendierth warriors about to be overwhelmed by the sheer size and ferocity of a half-dozen bugbears. He saw his opening and charged in between a pair of fighting drow, his right-hand sword leading with a thrust into the nearest bugbear's chest, his left-hand blade slashing out wide to drive back the next beast in line as it pressed a drow. Just in time, too, for a second bugbear farther along had tied up that drow's weapons, just enough to offer a clear opening to the one Zack had driven back.
"Finish them quickly,"
Zack called to his three fighting companions,
and it seemed likely, since 6 bugbears shouldn't prove much of a threat to 4 superbly armed and trained drow warriors once the element of surprise had been turned back. Zack accentuated his point by skipping ahead, swords going out left and right to push back the bugbears to either side. The one he had stuck roared and leaped at him, not realizing his speed. Whoever realized the speed of Zacnaphane until it was too late? His swords came back in, one high enough to defeat the bugbear's attempted club attack, the other darting forward, impaling the charging brute right beside the lesser hole Zack had already put into its chest. It fell away, and there were 5. But with more coming, judging from sounds further along the tunnels, are the shouts of dark elves, the roars of goblins. A bright light flashed from around the corner, orange and flickering like a flame strike, and Zack understood that the priestesses were not far afield. Beniago, Navrayandir, and Binifane were not so inclined as Zacnaphane. They knew the odds against them, had a good guess at the strength of the Hunsrin force. The sound of battle in their precarious position did not urge them forward to the fight. Rather, it sent them fleeing, 3 together down one corridor, then Navrayandir peeling off at the first intersection, Beniago and Binifane splitting at the next. Only Beniago's footsteps slowed as the sounds of fighting receded. He had left Zacnaphane behind, others too, but Zacnaphane, that was enough to give him pause. He knew how Jarlaxle felt about this one. So many thoughts swirled about him. Foremost among them was that he was a Bayenri. Would the Hunsrins dare attack him if he identified himself and surrendered? He could go back and end this conflict, perhaps, simply by announcing his true name. What house in Menzo Baranzon would dare incur the wrath of Matron Mother Evenel Bayenri? If he did that, though, his time in Bregan d'Earth would be at its end, his cover blown to all who would hear the omnipresent rumors. Which distressed him more? Jarlaxle's anger about the loss of Zacnaphane, or Beniago's relegation to once more become a simple minor noble in a house thick with them? He searched for a third option. Zacnaphane stabbed at the bugbear to his left a third time, then spun about and bore into the one on his right, his right-hand sword rolling figure eights in the air before him, each diagonal slash powerful and demanding attention. The sword moved so quickly, he had the bugbear's eyes following the movement, and so he suddenly flashed that sword back out to the right, then sprang ahead and drove his left-hand sword up under the brute's chin and into its brain, before it had refocused its attention back on him instead of the mesmerizing blade. Behind him, a third bugbear went down. Before him, along the line to the right, one of the drow warriors cut down a fourth. The remaining 2 stumbled backward and the battle was won, or paused long enough for Zack to glance back for Beniago, Deer, and Benefane. The weapon master gave a sigh. They weren't coming. He tried to rally the 3 standing with him, but 2 were already running away, and when he looked at the 3rd, he found the fellow standing perfectly still and unblinking. Too still. Too frozen. The 2 bugbears returned then, with 6 more in tow. Zack looked to the young drow, too young even to have completed the academy. Too young to die, Zack thought. Zacnaphane shrugged and rolled his weapons in his hands. He charged at the bugbears. So be it. Straight up, he would be overwhelmed, he knew, so he started low, diving into a forward roll. He came around and slowed his forward momentum, redirecting it into a leap high into the air, tucking his legs above the down-pointing weapons of the bugbears. He crossed his arms tightly against his chest, sword points out to opposite sides. He brought them across so suddenly as he neared the bugbear directly before him that it hadn't even begun to lift its weapon when its throat was removed so forcefully its head nearly fell free. Zacnaphane appeared to be pushing right through that brute, but he used his legs expertly to brace against the falling bugbear instead of rolling through it, dropping him to the floor. One of the nearby bugbears fell for it, but another did not, adjusting its retracted spiked club for a higher swing. Zack anticipated that possibility, though, and threw his head back, bending, and the club whipped just above him. He tucked and hit the ground and threw himself into another roll, this one to the side, and came back to his feet in a crouch that allowed him to propel himself forward suddenly, so suddenly at the bugbear at the far end of the line, which had turned to intercept him as the first one fell away, thinking he would go right through the line. Even with its agility, that bugbear had not quite reoriented itself to the swift change in Zack's position, and it was wide open now. 7 separate stabs, left and right alternating, gashed the beast, sending it falling away. 2 down, but 4 remaining, and when Zack reversed again, throwing himself back the way he had come, he found himself cut off, the remaining quartet spaced about him and now more cautious. Time was on their side, which Zack knew even more pointedly when a drow priestess arrived at the far tunnel. "Clay!" came a shout from the tunnel through which Zack had entered the room, a word every member of Bregan D'Earth knew well. Zack snapped his eyes shut as not one but a handful of ceramic pellets flew into the room, each specially coated to contain the magical energy contained within, pellets enchanted with powerful and continual dwyamers emitting bright light. When Zack opened his eyes just a moment later, he found the 4 bugbears shying, covering their eyes, groaning at the sudden brilliant light. The drow priestess, too, had shied, no longer visible in the side corridor. Zack Nefane leaped high and far, passing between the 2 bugbears on the left, backhanding his swords out to either side to slash hard against skulls and lifted arms. His swords disappeared into their scabbards by the time he landed, running full speed to the magically frozen comrade. He drove his shoulder into that drow's belly, bending the young man over him, scooping him up and running on. Down the corridors he went, cutting haphazardly down any side passages that appeared to bring him farther from the enemies. He found one to be a dead end, though, and desperately turned to retreat. The man he was holding groaned. Zack lowered him to the floor and slapped him awake, then tugged him along before he could even ask what had happened. They got back out into the main corridor soon after and sprinted away, finally coming to tunnels they both recognized. At the next fork, Zack nodded to his companion, wished him well, and pushed him toward the right-hand one while Zack raced down the left. He hoped he would see this man again one day in Menzo Baranzon, but at that moment, Zack Nefane wasn't giving either of them very good odds of getting out of this area of the wild Underdark alive. "We lost 3 for certain," Beniago told Jarlaxle some days later, back in the offices of Bregan D'Earth in the Claw Rift of Menzo Baranzon, beneath House Oblodra. 3 others remain missing. Jarlaxle stared at him and Binifane hard. "Yes, there is no word of Zack Nefane," Binifane admitted. "He knew," said Beniago. "He warned us that something was amiss, that something more than the Hunsrins were involved here. But alas, his warning came too late." "No word of him at all?" Jarlaxle asked. "When I last saw him, he was engaged with a gang of bugbears, a drow priestess coming into the room. I tried to help, but could not remain," Beniago said. Jarlaxle didn't respond, just sat tapping the tips of his fingers together. "I thought to demand a truce to reveal myself as Beanri," Beniago admitted. "I'm glad you did not," Jarlaxle decided. "For Bregan D'Earth, it is better that you did not, and better for House Beanri. I am tempted to beg Matron Mother Evanel to lay waste to House Hunsrin," Beniago said. Jarlaxle shook his head. "I agree with Zack Nefane's assessment. Better to not involve the Beanris until we know more about this Hunsrin scheme. Now go and learn what you may. Ask one of your cousin high priestesses to discern if the Hunsrins have taken Zack Nefane as their prisoner. If Matron Malice learns of this, there will be war. Not that that would be a bad thing, I suppose." Beniago gave a little laugh, clearly relieved that Jarlaxle wasn't holding him responsible for the apparent loss of his friend. He and Binifane left and returned to the Using My Conid in the Stench Streets, where they were overjoyed to find Nav Rayan Deer drinking the ordeal of the Underdark out of his thoughts. That left only 2 unaccounted for. The next day, Beniago was with Jarlaxle when the number went down to 1, as the youngest of the expedition returned, shaken but very much unhurt, and with a story of being saved by Zack Nefane. "We parted ways out in the tunnels, as we were trained," he told Jarlaxle and Binifane. "And none are better trained than Zack Nefane D'Urden," Jarlaxle said hopefully. His mood improved noticeably after that, his hopes high. But the days went by without any word of the lone, unaccounted-for Bregan-D'Erth associate. Perhaps the only drow in the city Jarlaxle considered a friend.
Zach Nefane hated the idea of returning to Menzo Baranzon. Out alone in the tunnels, more than once was he tempted to just keep running the other way, to strike out and survive as best as he could in a place that was not under the sway of vile Lolth. In his younger days, perhaps he would have tried. But now, in the end, Zach's roundabout course had him moving inexorably toward Menzo Baranzon, toward his son. He entered the city quietly through one of the smaller side gates. These, too, were guarded, but no one asked questions of other dark elves entering. Zach kept his traveling cloak up high and could only hope that he wasn't recognized. He didn't want Malice to know he was back. For that reason, he avoided the using my conid. Malice had eyes there often, he knew, and went straight to the claw rift, moving down the concealed stair and in through the kobold tunnels until he at last arrived at Jarlaxle's private quarters. At long last, Jarlaxle greeted him when Zach walked in. The mercenary leader was trying to play it casual, as if he was not overjoyed to see Zach Nefane, and had been expecting him all along. But Zach noted the man's body language, the eagerness pressing his shoulders forward, and understood that for one of the few times in his life, Jarlaxle's posture had betrayed his control. "Can you explain your delay?" Jarlaxle said. "I would never expect Zach Nefane to tarry." Zach glanced at the other two drow in the room, Beniago and the always annoying Camuriel O'Blodra. "It is good to be back," he said. "You do not believe that," Camuriel said, and Zach narrowed his eyes, warning the psionicist to stay out of his head if he was in there. Zach had never met anyone who made him feel this uncomfortable, including Camuriel's psionics-wielding family members and even the matrons of the city. "It is good to have you back," Jarlaxle replied, and Beniago chirped in with an assenting, "Aye." Zach Nefane focused on the Bayenri lieutenant. "You thought I would die in that room." "I did, but I tried to help," Beniago answered. "I know." He hadn't recognized the voice clearly in the heat of battle, but he had been fairly certain that it was Beniago who had thrown the light bombs, which had likely saved his life. "When Braylon returned, I was confident you would not be far behind," Beniago said.
"Braylon?"
"The young scout you carried out of there. He returned to us a few days ago." Zach nodded and was glad. "Promising young man," Jarlaxle went on. "He was born to commoners, but I find him nobler, certainly more loyal than the nobles I know. I found him when he was young and saw something there, so I brought him in. You would know this, Zach Nefane, had you bothered to spend more time." The rogue rambled on, and Zach Nefane sighed. Jarlaxle was talking about nothing important, not to convince Zach Nefane of the worth of this Braylon person, but because he knew Zach Nefane was agitated and anxious.
"Enough," Zach said at length, because Jarlaxle wasn't even beginning to slow in his endless tales.
He couldn't miss the smug look on Jarlaxle's face.
"Yes?" Jarlaxle asked sweetly. "I need to go out from the city again."
"Matron Malice won't agree."
"She doesn't know I'm back."
"Are you certain of this?" Jarlaxle asked. Before Zach could answer, Camuriel said,
"He is not sure."
"I am going to kill him someday," Zach muttered quietly.
"A common sentiment, and one that makes Camuriel proud, I am sure," Jarlaxle replied.
"Enough of this, though. I cannot yet return. It is too soon."
"You're not going back to House Doerden at this time, no," Jarlaxle agreed. "Not after that disaster in the tunnels. We can't let this stand. The Hunsrens have challenged us, and the treasure is considerable, if it really is Arandir the gnomes are mining."
"Looked like it to me, though I've only seen it once before in its unrefined form many decades ago."
"Even if not, I need to answer the Hunsrens, of course."
"What do you intend to do?"
"You told Beniago that you felt someone or something was trying to dominate you telepathically.
It makes sense that perhaps this gnome fellow was similarly afflicted. It is not typical of the Zwerfnebli that they betray their own for the sake of coin or other monetary gain.
You know a lot about the deep gnomes, do you?
I know a lot about everything, Jarlaxo replied. That's how I stay alive.
And how you stay surrounded by luxury.
I live in a cave.
We both know better.
Jarlaxo shrugged and let it go. So, if this gnomish fellow is dominated, mentally enslaved, we have to free him, Jarlaxo explained.
And how do you plan to do that?
Jarlaxo smiled at Zack and led the man's gaze to Camoriel O'Blodra. Camoriel does love challenges, Jarlaxo said.
What makes you believe it will be a challenge? The O'Blodran remarked.
Zack sighed again and rubbed his face, hardly thrilled at the idea of wandering back out into the Underdark, beside the likes of the strange psionicist. He calmed himself by silently remembering that one day his son would learn of this, and if Driz knew of Camuriel by then, he would certainly appreciate his father's sacrifice.